Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! So it's about a minute past the hour on this, the 19th day of October, 2012. Yeah, you heard me right. I said I wasn't going to be here. And I'm still not going to be. But you know how I am. I can't just, unless I'm like flat on my back or not here, not at least say hi. So why am I playing hooky tonight? Well, this is a very special time of year. Here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicod, Virginia. It is what we call Bridge Day Weekend. See, we've got the... It's West Virginia. We take pride in things like bridges. And being Bridge Day Weekend... Well, it really is when this little area where I live, where we live, tries to put its best foot forward. And... the festivities begin this evening. Now, the boy is off to a high school football game with his young lady friend. And Agnes and I are going to have some Agnes and I time. And we're just going to go out to one of the events this evening. What is Bridge Day? Bridge Day is an event, it's the largest single day festival in the state of West Virginia. It happens the third Saturday in October when, generally speaking, the fall colors have reached their absolute peak. I actually think they peaked a few days ago. Some big winds blew through earlier this week and took a lot of stuff off the trees. But if you can imagine, and, you know, you can look at it on Google Earth. It was a pretty impressive engineering feat when it was built in the 1970s. It's called the New River Gorge Bridge. And it is a celebration of the tourism culture here. It's also convenient because once you've walked out in the middle, it's the only time of the year you get to walk on the bridge. It's a four-lane, interstate highway-type bridge. They shut down half of it. They shut down all of it. But you can walk on one side of it. And if you go out far enough, you can see where they blew the snot out of the mountain, not too far from where I live, and you can see where they're blowing the snot out of another mountain. But there's all kinds of vendors and, you know, corn dogs and T-shirts, and there's a chili cook-off tomorrow, the brilliant little restaurant culture that exists in Fayetteville, West Virginia. Will be all dolled up and shiny, and there will be 100,000 people. It can get a little claustrophobic out on that bridge. That bridge, by the way, goes from the top of one mountain to the top of another mountain across what is called the New River Gorge, which is 786 feet deep. The deck of the bridge is 3 feet short of the height of the Eiffel Tower. People come from all over the world to jump off of it, not bungee jumping. Oh, no, they jump with parachutes. Some die. And that's Bridge Day. And the festivities kick off this evening. So that's where I'm going to be. So I guess that means I'm going to fire up, what do you think? Moran Monday? Yeah, we'll fire up the Moran Monday program and see where it takes us. I will say, before we go, just as something to ponder. I meant to bring this up last night, but I forgot. Hi, by the way. My name's Bob Kincaid. I'm so bad about that. I just make assumptions after 7 years that everybody knows everybody. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. Easily accessed at a variety of platforms on the Internet. Most easily at headonradionetwork.com. Also findable at whiterosesociety.org, where the podcasting address also exists. You can get the live stream of The Horn on places like TuneIn Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, Stitcher Radio, Dar.fm, Streama.com, Roku, I do believe. Yes. And for everybody who, by the way, for everybody who participates in the Friday night Skype chat, I don't know if we get back and everything goes well, maybe I'll pop into the Skype chat tonight. Because I get a hoot out of being in the Skype chat, the Horn Malloy Skype chat. It was born here at the Horn and just sort of expanded from there. Big fun. But something to ponder. I put this on my Facebook page yesterday. Meant to bring it up last night. I ran into a study or a story over at the Atlantic that I found absolutely amazing. They did one of those polls that periodically happens about who knows what about history. The question was fairly simple. Who killed Abraham Lincoln? 7% of those answering the scientific poll responded Lee Harvey Oswald. 75% knew it was John Wilkes Booth. But 7% said Lee Harvey Oswald. And I ran across that after an entire evening of discussions about what the who are the undecided voters. And that just clued me in. It engendered a long string of responses over at my Facebook page. You can friend me up at Facebook, just Bob Kincaid. I'm at Bob Kincaid on Twitter, too, if you want to get in touch that way. Yeah, see, it did the same thing to me, Psychoticus. Buddy Psychoticus in the chat room says, Barack Obama killed Lincoln. Oswald? Or... yeah. So, I had a much better understanding of the undecided voter at that point. Because 7%, you know, plus or minus the 4% margin of error, that's pretty much the undecided voters in this country, isn't it? And from there, I got to thinking about other places you can find them. Go to your local package store or the beer aisle of your grocery store. Stand around until somebody comes along and picks up two separate six-packs of Miller Lite. Looks at one, looks at the other. Looks at the one, looks at the other. And then you start reading their lips and they're going, tastes great, less filling. Tastes great, less filling. That's an undecided voter. Can't decide if they want the six-pack of Miller Lite that tastes great or the six-pack of Miller Lite that's less filling. Undecided. Wait till it rains. Put on some nice gear and so that you don't get soaked, and walk around town until you find somebody walking around staring straight up with their mouth wide open, yelling, help me, I'm drowning. That's the undecided voter. Back in the grocery store, loaf of Wonder Bread, loaf of Sunbeam. 30 minutes. That's the undecided voter. So just some thoughts along those lines before I head guiltily out the door. I do. I feel guilty about this. But it has been a wonderful week, and I wanted to thank you all again for making it a wonderful week. We are actually very, very close to meeting October's fundraising goal. We're within a couple of hundred bucks. And how magnificent that would be. So, I thought you would, you'd like to know that. If you haven't contributed and would like to, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. The snail mail address is also on the website under the tab Contribute. And with that, and with a heavy heart, but not too heavy, because even though I haven't been feeling my best lately, any opportunity to go out with my beloved spouse is a wonderful opportunity. I will bid you a happy weekend, a very happy weekend, and a reminder, please. This Sunday, beginning at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, join us on the Horn Stream or at Prism, PRISMWV, on Ustream.tv for another Prism West Virginia American History Chat with Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly. These things are always edifying. You'll learn things here, you'll learn things with Prism that you never would have otherwise known. Things that can be handy in talking to right-wingers, for instance, who make up history as they go along. 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on the Horn Stream and on Ustream.tv, and just search Prism, PRISMWV. And then we'll be back for more Ann Monday. Thanks for a wonderful week, everybody. Now I'm going to, we'll fire up the, we'll fire up the More Ann Monday program, and my best to you all, and maybe I'll catch some of you in the Horn Malloy Skype chat room. It's off to bridge day for us. Later, y'all. Security threat we've ever known. Right, boys and girls? Right, Martha Radish? Oy. And I'll be honest, we've got another pageant, what, tomorrow night? And I have no great hopes for Candy Crowley. Over at Think Progress, I saw the latest post there is Candy Crowley and the presidential debate's gender trouble. And it makes the point along the way, Elisa Rosenberg writing the post. She says, as a woman, as a journalist and a debate viewer, I'm at least glad to hear that Crowley views her role as to push forward the debate and to challenge the responses of the candidates, challenge the responses the candidates give the audience. Once the table is kind of set by the town hall questioner, then there is time for me to say, hey, wait a second, what about XYZ? Neither the Obama nor the Romney camps liked that approach. But what I don't like is the fact that Candy Crowley is a member of course, the for-profit media, and she is no more likely to ask hard questions than Wolf Blitzer would, than Jim Lehrer did, or than Martha Radish did. She's going to ask for-profit media. She's going to moderate as a for-profit media person. And they're going to be sharing the stage with a bunch of undecided voters? It's October the 15th, 2012. The election is 22 days away. Sorry, did you hear me doing math in my head? We know. I have failings. The election's 22 days away. What kind of drooling bell jar idiots are they going to have on that stage? Well, and there's Texas Betsy making me feel bad. Thanks a million, Betsy. Texas Betsy says, I had dinner last night with an undecided voter. How? I mean, somebody explain me, please. How can you possibly, on the 15th day of October 2012, be undecided between Barack Obama and Bishop Willard Romney? Just, you know, how? Now, I can understand if you're undecided between Roseanne and Jill Stein. I can understand if you're undecided between the Libertarian and the Constitution Party creep. That I get. But undecided between one of the two candidates who are going to win this race? Uh-uh. You're not undecided. You're ambivalent. And that's dangerous. So that's my first. I didn't use the sound bed or anything. We'll just cut to the chase. So that's Moran Monday nominee number one, the undecided voter. The only way you could possibly be undecided is if you have made a concerted effort to be absolutely clueless about what's been happening in this country for the last 4 years and what may happen in the next four, or what happened in this country for the last 12 years and what may happen for the next 40. You know, like if you live in a bell jar or something in Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium, then maybe, just maybe, you could be undecided. So Jim is getting us off to a good Moran Monday start. Hope Candy Crowley doesn't have a wardrobe malfunction. Please, Candy, no wide stripes or large accessories. Don't make me laugh, Jim. It hurts when I laugh. Ow. Ow. No wide stripes or large accessories. Unfair. Foul. Foul. But Moran Monday nominee number one. Yeah. The undecided voter. Kevin from Colorado Springs sent in a Moran Monday nominee. Below is a petition request I received, says Kevin. Another fine example of the gratitude of the corporatocracy. Namely, the gratitude they have for our service people. I really wonder what it'll take to wake the American public up to just how bad things are and just how badly needed nonviolent resistance in the millions is to start to turn things around. Wonder why the so-called patriotic Republicans are not coming out in large numbers to denounce this abuse of Carolina veterans and service people. Could it be that they're not really all that patriotic and given half a chance would charge even more to service people that are deployed but still live in the state? This is something that came via change.org. Here's the text. When I applied to UNC Pembroke, I had no idea that my military service would make it harder for me to go to school. North Carolina's been my home since 2006. I own a house, pay taxes, and vote here. But because I was deployed to serve outside the state, in Iraq and Texas, the university told me I'm not considered a resident and forced me to pay higher tuition to go to their school. It's not easy for men and women who are serving to leave our homes and families when we're asked to, but I think it's outrageous that veterans who want to go to school are being forced to pay more because of it. I started a petition, etc. My GI Bill tuition benefits only cover in-state costs. So because UNC Pembroke treated me as an out-of-state applicant, I was forced to borrow thousands of dollars to take the classes I needed. After the university rejected my appeal to have the residency status changed, I found out that thousands of veterans all over the country are being charged out-of-state tuition because we served abroad. And the University of North Carolina school system, which enrolls over 20,000 GI Bill recipients, is one of the largest culprits of tuition discrimination against veterans. Well, I'll be damned. Why am I not surprised? So, the University of North Carolina system, Moran nominee numero dos. Oh, it goes on. Believe me, it does. And just so we can have a little bit of audio in the program, I'd like to nominate... Okay, see, I'm still getting over it. Look, here's the long and the short of it. I may or may not get through 3 hours tonight, depending on if this thing gets really ugly again. And program note, I am not certain right now whether I'm getting on the road tomorrow or not. So there may or may not be a show tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. Watch my Twitter feed, watch my Facebook, watch the Horn homepage for the update. No, I want to nominate my own senator. Well, I mean, he's the coal industry's senator. He's not my senator. But Joe Manchin. We call him Blanche. Because he's got better hair than Blanche Lincoln. And he's always relied on the kindness of strange coal companies. You remember a couple of years back when, if you're a long-time listener to the show, you know this for sure. A couple of years back, Joe was running for this seat, the unexpired portion of the late Senator Robert Byrd's term in office. It hurts just to say. But when he was running for it, and running as far away from that Obama as he could get, he put up an ad, a TV ad, and it was around October. It was within a couple of weeks, if I recall correctly, of the anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy. He put up an ad in which he held a rifle, looked through the skull, chambered around with the bolt, put the bolt down, looked through the scope, and then shot, oh really, the cap and trade bill, because that's bad for energy in West Virginia. It's bad for coal. If it's bad for coal, it can't be good for us. Actually, no, coal is not good for us, but you understand. Well, he's got a new ad. I thought the one with him getting his hair cut by his wife was pretty stupid. But this one goes past stupid and runs over into mean. Hateful. Threatening. Dangerous. He's got his rifle back. In fact, it's a different rifle because the rifle in the last ad had a blue steel barrel and a nice walnut stock. I don't know if he couldn't get that piece back from the properties department or if he just got a new gun for Christmas. This one's got a synthetic stock and a stainless barrel. It could be anything. Maybe a Browning. They make great. The nice thing about hunting with those is that if you take a beautiful, like Weatherby or a Steyr, one of those Austrian pieces of magnificence, out into the woods and you stumble through the brambles and the next thing you know you got a long briar scratch right down that hand-polished walnut stock, you come home just sick because you've uglied up such a pretty thing. That's what makes those synthetic stocks and stainless barrels just unapproachably wonderful. So that's what he's got now. Maybe it's because he's on a mine site. Yeah, it really. Took a gun to a mine site. Somebody let him. Oh, for you, Joe, anything. So to describe the video portion of this ad, he's standing there with a high-powered rifle in his hand. Dig the dialogue.
I know what you're thinking, but I don't need to shoot the captain.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that noise? Wait, before the guitar starts or anything, you got to hear the noise.
I know what you...
That's him opening the bolt. Sliding back the bolt on a bolt-action hunting rifle with a great big honking scope on it. Now pay no attention to the pretty guitar music.
I know what you're thinking, but I don't need to shoot the captain train bill. I already killed it.
You hear that? He's bragging. He personally killed the cap and trade bill. Now, let's not get into a long evening-consuming discussion about whether the cap and trade bill was actually that effective. It was an attempt to take a step forward. It had literally billions of dollars in corporate welfare for the coal industry in it. And it had a piddling little pissant amount for wind and solar, too. But it died in the Senate. It was passed in the House. It died in the Senate. And there's Joe Manchin taking personal credit for having killed it. With a rifle! It's like it's out of some sort of Johnny Cash song. I shot it just to watch it die. Damn. I don't know if it's gotten this weird. I don't know if the politics have gotten this weird where you are, but this is frightening. This is allegedly my senator with a gun in his hand.
I know what you're thinking, but I don't need to shoot the captain's tree bill. I already killed it.
No one has...
Now, this voice is the voice of a creepy little man with a pornographer's mustache named Bill Rainey. Bill Rainey is the president of the West Virginia Coal Association. He is standing on a coal site, probably near a mountaintop removal operation, with tons and tons and tons of coal piled up in piles behind him. So, what does he say about old Joe?
No one has stood up for coal more than Joe Manchin.
No one stood up for coal more than Joe Manchin. You know, call me crazy, but if I was running a political campaign, I'd want to say, no one has stood up for the people of fill-in-the-blank, like fill-in-the-blank politician. So that's Bill Rainey. He's an industry flack for the management side of the coal industry. Next guy.
Manchin.
Joe took on the federal government to protect our jobs.
Joe.
That voice. And everybody, and we do it a lot here, or used to, because my daddy, my granddaddy, my uncle, my great granddaddy, all coal miners. My dad wasn't one for a terribly long time, but while he was a member of the United Mine Workers of America. My grandfather was so beloved that even after he retired, they broke the rules to make him the local's representative to the international convention in Indianapolis. Somewhere around here, we've got a photograph of John L. Lewis stooping to greet a seated man and shake his hand, and that man was my grandfather. Joe Manchin took on the federal government to protect our jobs. You know who that was? That was Cecil Roberts that said that, the president of the United Mine Workers of America, whose endorsement of mountaintop removal has meant the loss of thousands of underground mining jobs in the state. that Cecil Roberts. So now we're back to creepy little Bill Rainey.
Manchin is good for business, and he's good for West Virginia jobs.
Not so good for West Virginia health. I guess that just kind of goes unsaid.
There's enough coal and natural gas under our state to fuel our country's energy needs.
Now, this is Joe. We're back to Joe. This is just a little pissant 30-second commercial, okay? Pay very close attention to these words. Remember, this is a Moran Monday nomination. You might have a decision to make somewhere along the way.
Coal and natural gas.
There is enough coal and natural gas.
Enough coal and natural gas under our state to fuel our country's energy needs for decades.
Except that's a lie. Or it's not a lie if you include the natural gas part. There is certainly not enough coal under West Virginia to meet our country's energy needs for decades. Most of it will be mined out in the next 20 years. Much of that will be mined out via mountaintop removal if these parasitic bastards aren't stopped. Because they are literally sucking the life out of this region. Certainly taking away all its wealth, leaving little behind. And in their wake also, a grim tide of disease, birth defects, anomalies, cancers, and horror unmentionable. So what was that you were saying about meeting America's energy needs there, Joe?
Fuel our country's energy needs for decades and create great jobs. And I'll take on anyone who tries to stop us.
And create great jobs. Oh, those jobs are great. Oh, what? You've got black lung? That was a great job you had, wasn't it? Oh, what? Yeah, what do you mean your baby was born needing breathing treatments? Well, but we had great mountaintop removal jobs, right? So, just tell your little baby to thank God for coal in between puffs on her inhaler. But remember, he started this out with a gun in his hand, right? So what does he say at the end?
And create great jobs. And I'll take on anyone who tries to stop us.
What are you going to do, Joe? Shoot me? Big strong man can shoot a piece of paper real good. You going to have me blown away, Joe? You'll take on anybody who tries to stop us. Some of us, Joe, are taking on you to keep you from being able to participate in our demise. My God, go to ACACT.org, ACHEACT.org, and read, follow the link to the studies, the legitimate, scientific, peer-reviewed studies that show what it costs us, the price we pay for simply trying to live in a place. And to do so without being poisoned. This is an ad all about facilitating poisoners. And Joe is saying he'll take on anybody who tries to stop the poisoning. It's pretty grim, isn't it?
I'm Joe Manchin, and I approve this ad.
I'll bet you do. So does that qualify? I mean, is that Moran material? Because it sure does feel like it is to me. I mean, that's pretty nasty. I got to tell you, that's a pretty nasty feeling. when you see an ad like that and realize that your senator is after your children. That's just gross. I'm Joe Manchin, and I'm coming for your gallbladder. I'm Joe Manchin. I'm coming for your lungs. I'm Joe Manchin, and I want to see a little more cancer grow in that brain of yours, kid. Because that's what he's saying. This man won't acknowledge these studies that detail a burgeoning health crisis in Appalachia. He can't quite bring himself to it. You know why? He's a coal broker. He's in the biz. Yeah. He doesn't live where the water runs red. He doesn't live where the taste of blasting dust in the back of your mouth makes it feel like caustic soda has been poured on your tongue. Oh, no. No, he doesn't live there. He lives in northern West Virginia and D.C. And the only thought that he gives to those of us who are struggling for a future for this region is to tell the rest, to tell the knuckle walkers that he's ready to take us on. You know, him and his shooting gun. Horrifying. But yeah, we are, we have a surfeit, as it were. A surfeit of potential Moran Monday nominees. You remember the former governor of South Carolina? Mark Sanford? The guy who went hiking the Appalachian Trail all the way to Argentina? Where he hooked up with his friend who wasn't his wife, that is now his wife? Yeah, that Mark Sanford? Well, when you ignominiously leave state office and you happen to be a member of the Republican Party, there's always a job waiting for you at Radio Rwanda, Fox News. And so, yesterday, Sunday, he appeared on Radio Rwanda to talk to one of the fabulous Fox blondes. This one was Shannon Bream, about what to expect from the next presidential pageant. You'll figure out pretty quick what the nomination was for.
I'm going to go back to South Carolina and check in with former South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford to talk strategy ahead of the next debate. Governor, we'll jump right in.
Wait, why can't we call him former South Carolina governor and confessed adulterer? I mean, we're talking about right-wing fundamentalist evangelicals who love Jesus and everything. I mean, that's who watches Fox News. Shouldn't we at least mention that the guy has... No. Why now? No, why would we do that?
To it, what do you think that Governor Romney did well last time around that convinced so many folks who were maybe undecided, at least from what the polling shows us initially, that he's their man?
Well, I think he was assertive, and a lot of folks had wondered, would he ever step out and really challenge Obama? I think that was one of the real frustrations with conservatives across this country. So I think he needs to continue that, and I think obviously Obama's going to come out in this case much more forcefully, and he's going to throw a lot of spears, and I think it's very, very important that in this case, Romney stay focused on his vision for the country.
You got that, right? The President of the United States in the next debate is going to, and I quote, throw a lot of spears. Now, maybe some of you don't speak racial code. I do. The folks over at Crooks and Liars, where I found that video, do. Obama's going to throw a lot of spears. There are a lot of ugly epithets out there for people of African descent. One of those is, okay, thank you, Marty. Marty said, yes, I caught the spear chucker thing. That's the phrase, spear chucker. Spear chucker. The disgraced former governor of South Carolina, Stan, who lied to his staff, lied to the people of South Carolina, lied to his wife, lied to the nation, concocted insane, unbelievable stories like hiking the Appalachian Trail, showed himself to be a man of low morals, if any, went on television yesterday and called the President of the United States a spear chucker. There's no getting around this. There's no way you describe a white candidate as he's going to throw a lot of spears. I'm sure if you were even going to get near that, you'd say he's certainly going to throw a lot of javelins. Spears. Throw. Chuck. They called Bill Clinton everything under the sun. They never quite got around to suggesting that Bill Clinton throws or threw spears. Well, Samantha, I expect that in this next debate, he'll take that ring out, that bone out of his nose, and really come after. Come on! I only suggest that as an alternative, because that was something that Flush Flimball did some several years ago, telling an African-American caller who took issue with one of his ignorant points to call, my friend, I'm hanging up on you. Call me back when you get that bone out of your nose. I don't know. What do you make the odds? Anywhere with legal bookmaking parlors, I don't know, Australia? Great Britain? Check in, would you? Just see if you can get an odds maker over there to give you odds on the likelihood that one of these Romney-supporting weirdos is finally going to blow up and say the N-word between now and Election Day. Because I think the odds are pretty good. I mean, hell, Bro Fromix Santorum got real close. Pro-government, anti-war nig, remember? No, I didn't say I didn't want to give money to black people. I said I didn't want to give money to blah people. How long? What are the odds? That'd be a bet worth making. Shoot, we might be able to, if it came in, we might be able to fund the horn for a month or something. I mean, I suggest the UK or Australia or whatever, simply because, and especially the UK, because I've always been told that the bookies there will make odds on which bird flies off a wire first. Maybe we could get odds at one of Sheldon Adelson's casinos. Don't know. Morons. Morons. Then there's the teabaggers. They're still out there. They're still working it. You know the Obama phone thing from a month or so ago? The teabaggers have a brand spanking new ad out all about that. Yeah, wait till you hear this. Have Barack Obama's policies... Wait a minute. Have Barack Obama's policies empowered or enslaved Americans?
Everybody in Cleveland know minority got Obama's phone. Keep Obama in president, you know? He gave us a phone.
The Obama record, 1 in 7 Americans on food stamps. $16 trillion in debt.
Keep Obama in president.
Millions of jobs lost. He lost them. All those millions, he lost every one of them. I don't know if they all fell out of his pocket at once, or maybe they're under... Remember when George Bush had to go hunting under his sofa trying to find the weapons of mass destruction? Maybe they're there with them. I don't know. Not one of those jobs was lost on George Bush's watch or as a result of anything that George Bush did, mind you. He lost them all.
He gave us a phone. Keep Obama in president.
Can we afford 4 more years of Barack Obama?
The Tea Party Victory Fund is responsible for the content of this advertising.
You damn right they are. Because they are some serious racist pigs. Marty's got his traveling shoes on. Oh, let's go over to one of Sheldon Adelson's casinos, the one in Macau, I think. They'd probably take those odds. Nah, then they I don't know. Somebody called a boss and he'd issue a warning. Then again, you know how it is when you don't when you're told not to think of an elephant. All right, this is a memo from Sheldon Adelson. I don't want any of Romney's supporters saying the N-word. Don't think about the N-word. Don't say it. Don't say it. Don't say it. Oops. And then this. Now, I get a lot of PR blast emails from the folks at a television show called Extra. I can't remember having that often had occasion to actually use one of them. Because usually they're things like, video, Brad Pitt smolders in Chanel No. 5 commercial. Russell Crowe and Danielle Spencer divorce. Prenup details. Jennifer Aniston's wedding. What Chelsea Handler knows. See, that just doesn't fit with the program. But lo and behold, here comes one I can use. So credit is gladly given. Gladly given. To, and I want to make sure I get this right. I do this professional and everything. Credit is given to Extra, the TV show tabloid Extra, extratv.com. Because this is the funniest moron, because somewhere in Alaska, a white woman is screaming. Stand by, please. Okay, here's the setup. In preparation to... do the or in the course of doing the PR front end work for the movie Cloud Atlas, a book which I have read, and I don't know how I feel about the film. It looks like it's going to be a fun watch, but it may have about as much to do with the book as the film Forrest Gump had to do with the book Forrest Gump. Interestingly, they both have Tom Hanks in them. Hopefully, Tom will not be doing a really poor, stupid southern accent. But Tom Hanks and Halle Berry, who is also in the film, sat down to discuss Cloud Atlas. This was what happened.
Quick, how many devices in your...
Aw, damn it, it's a commercial. You know, they really ought not to do that when they send these things out. If you want me to use it, don't put a commercial in front of it. Oh, it'll be gone in a minute. Goodbye now. Come on. All that set up only to get... How long is this thing? Okay, here we go. Here we go.
You want to know who I'm related to?
Who are you related to?
Sarah Palin.
No!
That's what I said. No!
No. Why, what? Is it a DNA thing? I think that's fantastic.
Some twisted way somebody sent me this information that she was my...
Has this been genealogically...
This is the cloud atlas continuum. Without a doubt, I'm telling you, the connections that go through,
see?
It doesn't matter who, what race, where, what time.
It's true.
It's amazing.
There it is, living proof.
There it is, right there.
That's right. Somewhere in Alaska, a white woman is screaming, Halle Berry, related... to Godzilla from Wasilla. That's just too precious not to... Yes. Ron and Raleigh noting, hey, Bob, once again you've taken one of our fine Republican politicians out of context. After all, Mark Sanford went down to South America and made an honest woman of his hoochie mama. You're going to get me. You can't use words like that, Ron. I get the mail. He wouldn't say something racist. Oh. You want to know who I'm related to? Sarah Palin. I can't wait. Maybe that's the one. I am not related to... I think Halle Berry did that just to make Sarah Palin scream. And if she did, God love her for it, right? So that's just a smattering of More and Monday nominees. You, of course, are free to add your own. We have come to the end of this hour's filibobster, this evening's filibobster on this Moran Monday, the 15th of October, 2012. And I encourage you to bring your own nominees. I'm going to try to hold out here as long as possible and hope the little Republican in my gut doesn't demand too much attention. And... don't make me do it all, because God knows I can. I could go ahead with the filibobster from here on out, and it could be positively a rich harvest. Hypocrites, threatening bosses, cokes, outsourced burgers, no really, women who don't want women to have the vote, The ubiquitous claim of anti-Semitism coming from a guy who makes anti-Semitic remarks. No, this is, in fact, a rich, rich harvest. So, you're bound to have your own. Chime in. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your own nickel, if you don't need us to carry the freight, 304-658-3333. By the way, a listener alert for those of you who download the Peter B. Collins podcast. I had the rare pleasure of having a conversation with him for the podcast that will be going up later this week. And many, many thanks to our buddy Andy for helping to set that up in an effort to further the growing power of the AIC Act and those who are demanding justice here in Appalachia. Thanks, Andy, and thanks to Peter B. Collins. It was a great conversation. Peter is a real pro, and, talking with him was like talking to your neighbor. He's just that good. So there we have it, the end of the filibobster, and we'll take a little break and come back. This is Conversation Radio on America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Mitt Romney style. Romney style. I got a horse in the Olympics, girl, but I don't even watch him. In and out of tax loopholes, cause I'm so fucking awesome. Bitch, it's Friday night, you know we benefit hopping. Check my consent, you, us consumption. I got distinguished hair, and a private jet that flies me way up in the air. Buy and sell your company with so much savoir faire. I bought a mansion for each one of my 24 heirs. Straight up millionaire. Mitt Romney style. Romney style. Mitt Romney style. Romney style. Mitt Romney style.
Talking wine and cheese, mad IV degrees. Baby, baby, I got butlers just to wipe me. You know what I'm saying?
Means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
82. Cool Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Cool Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Oh. Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Little Genius, we got your soap right here.
And don't forget about that body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Putin you are. I'm Bob. This is my Republican gallbladder.
I hate him.
By the time the show ended Thursday night, I felt like I was in that scene from the first Alien movie where the critter pops out of the guy's gut. I mean, oh, yuck. And I have been offered some kind alternative therapies in light of the fact that, well, it probably ain't coming out anytime soon, that may actually help me to live a pain-free life without surgery. I'm going to be trying them. Bob, pardon me for asking it this way, says Kevin in Colorado Springs, but do you not have some sort of indigent health care system in West Virginia? Here it's called Colorado Indigent Care Program, and you do not have to be homeless or totally broke. Well, but you do in West Virginia. Let's put it this way. A man working a minimum wage job who doesn't have any children but has a place to sleep at night cannot qualify for Medicaid in West Virginia. That's a fact. And it's a fact in, what, 24, 31 other states? That's why a lot of us had a lot of hopes pinned on the Medicaid expansion portion of the Affordable Care Act, and that's why that dead-eyed freak John Roberts decided, well, you know, we can let the mandate stand, but we'll call it a tax. That way we can say that Obama raised people's taxes. But you know what? Making the states participate in taking care of uninsured working uninsured working poor. Now that's got to go. That violates the spirit and the original intent and the yada yada yada. And you know, Scalia went off and masturbated in the corner for a while. That's unconstitutional, taking care of uninsured working people. Yeah. So the short answer, Kevin, is no. By the way, that little song I played there was from College Humor, collegehumor.com. The following tweet came in from Sandra. Oh my God, this is so wrong. A horrible parody from a horrible song, make it stop. Wasn't it? Oh. And the things that pain medication will make you do. I got home last night and saw that. And from there, went down the rabbit hole into the whole world of something that is I was unaware of, but is apparently known to the rest of the world as K-pop. Yeah. Korean bubblegum pop. Oh, my God. Don't go there. Or do, if that's your thing. I had no idea what Gangnam Style was. See, now I'm just doing geezer radio. But even my teenage daughter blew through the bedroom door and looked at me and said, Daddy, what in the hell are you listening to? When it's so unhip that my teenagers don't want any part of it, I know it's just terminally unhip. Okay. So let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Geezer Radio, now improved with more cane shaking and darn you awful kids, get off my lawn.
My lawn, exactly. Exactly.
You know, you were talking about the actual thing with the horn with the special memberships for the veterans. I did mention that we get the Stargate devices, but I didn't mention the cornucopia of pain relievers we get, which I think you forgot to mention, the Moonwalker morphine. If you contribute a special amount, you get a dose of Moonwalker morphine. This will cure whatever ails you.
Really? It doesn't come with... I get a terrible headache from that stuff, but, well, call me crazy.
And I'm not talking about Neil Armstrong either.
No, I understand. I understand. See, that's the thing with you, David. You never stop thinking about how to keep this all going, how to keep all the plates spinning in the air.
I know. I definitely have to go to maybe pitch this to Donald Trump and The Apprentice.
Well, as soon as he gets done, speaking of morons, as soon as he gets done having a conniption about those made-up phony jobs numbers. He's a job truther now.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I have some Moran nominations.
Oh, do please.
And it's going to go through a series of an arc. I'm going to send you the piece de resistance right now, and it goes through an arc of horrible to, oh my God, this needs to be talked about, that kind of thing. So the first one is, and I saw this and I thought, I have to mention this to Bob because it's wrong on so many levels and it sounds like an Onion article. But apparently, in the metropolitan areas, in the bartending world, you know it as well as I do. Young people really have that dollar for spending when it comes to drinks. That's why it's so lucrative. And when you turn up the loud music and you get people disoriented, cash comes flying out everywhere. And one of the interesting things that I didn't know about was this habit of putting liquid nitrogen in drinks.
Oh, I heard about that a little while back. What the hell is that?
Okay, so the thing that makes what makes a bar cooler and more chic than ever before? I guess what makes it cooler, this is like a Looney Tunes episode, not to mention a cartoon reference. This is something that you would see like Daffy Duck drinking. Apparently, you know, they teach bartenders, and this is happening all over Europe and I'm guessing parts of the United States as well, where they serve drinks with liquid nitrogen. And so it just so happens when you think about that, that's like a Mr. Wizard moment where we need a Mr. Wizard meme where he's slapping himself in the head and saying, liquid nitrogen and cocktails is bound to go wrong. Yes, and you can see where I'm leading up to.
Yeah, but why not liquid helium? Wouldn't that at least give you the giggly voice?
Well, here's where it's leading up to, and it is going to get a bit dicey in a moment, as you can tell.
How did I know?
So this lady was partying pretty heavily, and she said, you know what, I feel like having a cocktail because I'm a young person, and it's time for celebration. You only live... YOLO, you only live once.
Stop it. Wait a minute. That phrase. How does this stuff just spread? Well, I guess it's social media and stuff. That's another one. I looked at my son the other day and said, YOLO, dude. He goes, don't ever say that around me again, Dad. I hate that phrase.
If anyone wants to have a Cafe Press winner of T-shirts, just don't say... here's one for you. I found it on 4chan. I got it from 4chan. Any of those phrases, because that's where I think it originated. That's where I think a lot of these, most of these memes originate from, that said message board. But anyways, so the girl was having a great time, and she decided to celebrate with one of these liquid nitrogen cocktails. Now, usually, when you have a liquid nitrogen cocktail, the first thing you should ask is, hey, is this prepared right if you're in the bartending business? But I guess, you know, when you are serving with these kind of chemicals, something is bound to go wrong, and wrong it did. So she drinks the liquid nitrogen cocktail, and it's served, well, how can I put this delicately? It's not served correctly. And it perforates her stomach. She lost her entire stomach after drinking that.
I've seen those like science things where they dip the rose in the liquid nitrogen, and then they take it out and it shatters like glass.
Right.
I just can't imagine that's good for you.
Yeah, I can't imagine that either. And the funny thing about it is that when I was reading this story, they were talking about, okay, this restaurant's going to stop serving it, but everywhere else is like, that's just one instance. And then
there's potential for so much fun. No, not fun. So many disasters here. Hey, Harry, yeah. Did they bring in the liquid nitrogen this week? No, they said they was out and left us some liquid hydrogen instead. And yeah, you know, then you know, at the bar, he or she, they've got their cocktails and they got a cigarette. Boom, you know, Hindenburg.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, it's ridiculous on the face of the fact that you could easily find a replacement ingredient that would make it sort of bubbly.
Well, look, I mean, I admit to some stupidity in my younger years.
Yeah.
I remember the year that we made the punch in college, and, of course, it was made with whatever happened to be in anybody's given liquor cabinet and a lot of fruity stuff. And we threw in a block of dry ice.
Yeah.
It was Halloween. It was supposed to, the cauldron is supposed to damned well smoke.
Right.
And
right.
You don't want to serve boiling hunch punch, okay?
Right.
So, but nobody, but you know, it just kind of, and does it, but nobody was getting glasses of liquid CO2. It just kind of made it a little fizzy.
You know, the thing about that that's so crazy is when you look at the dangerous side of that, and I'm just looking from a liability stance, why wouldn't you find a replacement for it? After, I mean, all of these restaurants are still going to continue to serve. That's the crazy thing. All of these restaurants are still going to continue to serve it, probably in the New York, Chicago area and so forth. They'll do it as well because there just hasn't been that many instances. And I just have to go back to the fact that how can liquid nitrogen be that cool?
I don't think you're a hip, trendy bar frequenter, are you, David?
No, you're hip.
You're one of the hippest people in on the planet. There's no getting around how trendy you are.
Of course, no,
but I don't see you being one of those people who opens his Kiana shirt down to his navel and fluffs his chest hair and has gold chains and talks with his teeth clenched and calls everybody babe.
No, I'm not fist pumping to Gangnam Style with a liquid nitrogen cocktail in my hand.
Right. Yes, that.
I'm not doing that. I don't see it, but it's because you're not. Yeah.
You don't understand the desperate level of ennui that attends the lives of people standing in bars who need liquid nitrogen. You know what the origin of this is, and I'm sure he probably feels bad about it because the man is a genius.
Yeah.
The guy who started and ran to international acclaim the restaurant in Spain called El Bulli, mm-hmm, or El Bulli.
Okay.
B-U-L-L-I. I don't know if that's a Y or an L sound. Farron Adria. He had all these concoctions where he was reducing foods to their absolute essences.
Right.
And he, you know, he played with food grade gases and liquid gases and, mm-hmm, stuff like that. And it was really cool.
Right.
And then people who merely wanted to capitalize and make some money off of it instead of doing, you know, he was doing real mind-bending philosophical excursions into what do we mean when we say eat. This is just somebody that wants to add another $2 onto the cost of a cocktail.
Right.
And that's where it all came from. And, you know, with some flashing lights and some, you know, Gangnam Style going in the background.
Yeah.
It's just too cool to stay away from. That Ron and Raleigh sent me the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, an MP, a member of Parliament, has led calls for a ban on drinks made with liquid nitrogen after surgeons removed the stomach of one of his teenage constituents who drank a cocktail made with the ingredient. Gabby Scanlon, 18, complained of breathlessness and gastric pain after having the drink in Oscar's Wine Bar during a night out with friends in Lancaster City Center on Thursday, this is in the UK, and was taken to hospital where she was diagnosed with a perforated stomach.
Right.
I would like to see these drinks banned from sale so we do not see anyone else's son or daughter injured or even killed, said David Morris, the Tory MP for Morecambe and Lonsdale. I hope I didn't mangle that too badly. You know what's going to happen when it becomes illegal, right?
It's going to be bootleg liquid nitrogen.
You're goddamn right. There will be liquid nitrogen raves.
The one thing that really just strikes me is there's so many replacement ingredients you can get to make that bubbly like that. And it's just it just shows you the ridiculousness of the idiocracy that we continue.
Well, you can use, I mean, you really can. You can use a tiny little grain of food grade the dry ice, carbon dioxide. And you can put it, and if you do it right, the drink does not explode, but it bubbles and froths merrily along, and there you go.
And you know, the thing is, you can tell people, and you can say, if they ask, is this a liquid nitro drink? And they say, you bet your ass it is. Enjoy it. They're not going to care.
Right. You know, I mean, the article says here, when exposed to air, liquid nitrogen creates a dense fog and is used by bartenders and chefs to add an element of visual drama to dishes or to freeze things quickly, such as ice cream.
Right.
It is also, this is the fun part, it's also used for removing warts and has industrial uses.
You know, Bob, the thing about that is that I think they mistakenly found the best use for it would be to use it in a the background of a Count Floyd sketch in a beaker, not a.
I would not be one bit surprised to find out that it had been.
Being the
knower of trivial things, for instance, that I am.
Yeah.
I know that if you want to be a really reputable server of Guinness in your local, let's say you're a pub owner.
Uh-huh.
Well, Guinness, as I understand it, has to be pumped with compressed nitrogen, not CO2. Most tap systems use CO2, but you use nitrogen with Guinness because that's what gives it the itsy bitsy, really creamy, foamy head. You know, the carbonation, and instead of the bubbly, burny kind of stuff that you get from CO2. So, I mean, there are uses, but liquid nitrogen? No, what?
No. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And so the second Mora nomination is a dual nomination, and I nominate it to Bill Maher and Zombie Coulter. Bill Maher for actually bringing back Zombie Coulter and having a conversation on what, Bob?
Oh, no.
A conversation on race, because she's an expert. Don't ask Cornell West.
She had to go on Maher to rehabilitate herself after getting her ass handed to her by Whoopi Goldberg on The View.
Right.
I mean, it's
right.
Getting pretty tough when there's harder questioning on The View than there is on Bill Maher.
Well, I think the thing about it is though I was actually watching. You can go to HBO and see it. I didn't watch the whole episode. I watched the Bill Maher Ann Coulter exchange, and then he invited her in the overtime section where the panel, I'm not kidding you, was Daryl Issa, Ben Affleck, Schweitzer from Montana, and Ann Coulter. And I was like, this is so goddamn surreal, I couldn't make this up.
That's just twisted.
I know, it is twisted, and I was listening to the discussion that they were having, and everybody couldn't, and she was saying stuff that was so outrageously wrong, everyone was just gobsmacked. Like, I can't believe this woman's here, and we're actually trying to have a legitimate conversation, and nobody's really saying anything. I think there's this area where it's very prevalent. It goes back to what you were talking about with the women moderators. Of the fact that because Zombie Coulter is a woman, we won't get into that. But because she is of a female persuasion, there is this part where guys will not go that aggressive on her.
And I think that's a very real phenomenon. And I can offer something from a completely different quadrant of the universe on
right.
In wrestling, you know, high school wrestling can get kind of grabby.
Mm-hmm.
And you may recall that Ferg was in wrestling a couple of years ago.
Right.
Well, they ran up against a real problem when a young woman was on one of the school's wrestling teams. And these poor boys around here that's a girl. I can't because we've done a pretty good job, maybe, of explaining to boys that in the 21st century it is no longer okay to do violence against women.
Mm-hmm.
So along comes this young woman in a wrestling singlet, and she just whipped ass on everybody. I mean, just boom, grab them, boom, down, pin them, done.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't even know what to call that, but that was the beauty of seeing Ann Coulter get it handed to her on The View. Nobody could claim unfair. You know, Whoopi just smacked her and made her like it. I thought it was kind of weird that she showed up on The View. What was she wearing, her signature little black skinny dress the other night on Mar?
I think she was.
Well, because she actually wore something with some color in it to The View.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know if she was trying to disarm them or what, but God.
Well, you know, the thing about it is that she was also on the I Listen to This One as well. She was on Combs, and the fact is that Combs was I don't know if he's what kind of friends they are, associates or whatever. But again, it's that moment where when she says something, because they have an association of a Fox friendship or what would you? I don't know what you would.
Well, no, see that happens in my head too, David.
Yeah.
Because I have this sneaking suspicion that the little red light on the top of the camera goes off, and they wait a couple of beats, and the floor producer says clear. And Mar or whoever turns to Ann Coulter and goes, you know, it just blows my mind that this same shtick is still working for you. And she goes, oh, I know, isn't it great? Let's go have a drink.
Yeah.
And they sit and they have a high old time.
It is ridiculous.
Because and the same, you know, the same thing with Combs or anybody else that is allegedly liberal or progressive. I wouldn't cross the street to see that woman. Because she is a loathsome example of an alleged member of the human race,
and
as such, anybody, David, who does that, the light goes off and they go, hey, nice work, Ann. You know, I don't know how you're keeping this same shtick working for you. You know, maybe it's like Rodney Dangerfield and the whole no respect thing. He worked that for 50 years, but you know, more power to you. At that point, it is not real. At that point, it is entertainment. At that point, it is wrestling. You know what I mean?
Right. And it goes back to the fact that because she is a woman and she is from the right wing, she gets carte blanche wherever she goes in these shows. And you literally cannot attack her and be aggressive with the questioning because instantly you are probably taken out back by her publicist and given a scolding, like, what the hell was that, and that kind of thing, and then, you know, the threats come out of, you want me to end your career and all of that. That's what I see happening with right-wingers like that who constantly have this kind of media coverage, and I can understand, like, why so many people just are like, let's move to the next segment, say whatever crazy shit you're going to say, and I'm not going to touch it, that kind of thing, because I mean, there's a certain amount of rebuttal that you can do, but I go back to the fact that, I mean, that's part of the reason why Fox has so many beautiful women that are that distracting, because when you have these kind of styled these guests come on and there's a bit of confrontation, that there's only so much confronting that they can do because it's a woman like Megyn Kelly.
Right, because it feels like you're being mean to a kitten.
Right. And so the third nomination is actually it's actually interactive. It's an audio piece that has brought to us from the mouth of Bill Moyers, and I think you should play it because it really is the piece de resistance of Moranitude.
Yeah, and I double checked when you sent it in. And it's certainly not too long for not too long for the program or anything, which works out rather nicely. Well, let me see if I can get the stupid production computer to cooperate.
How cooperate?
Exactly. I'm sorry, David. Here we go. Hang on. Even got it queued up, I think.
Before we get to the serious business, let's correct the record. Big Bird isn't the only public broadcaster on whom Mitt Romney and the conservative propaganda machine have opened hunting season. If you saw Bill O'Reilly's debate with Jon Stewart a week or so ago, you saw Big Bill repeatedly trying to use me as the poster child for the federal deficit.
We have a president here who believes in social justice, all right? He wants to take your money, my money, the money of the 1%, all right? And he wants to give it...
He even came armed with a flashcard.
Bill Moyers. There he is. Bill gets it. Here's what we get. $16 trillion debt, and we got to pay for Bill Moyers. Let him compete on his own.
Nice work, O'Reilly, and thanks for the attention. But if you had grown up watching Sesame Street, you'd know your alphabet by now, and you would know NPR is not PBS. I'm on television, just like you. Well, not exactly like you. You reside in an alternate reality where the truth is as elusive as a moonbeam and facts as alien as little green men with bug eyes. Your flashcard had it wrong. NPR doesn't pay me. I don't work for National Public Radio. Never have. This weekly series is on public television stations. But we don't get any money from PBS either. We raise the funds ourselves, as anyone who can read would know. You can see who our funders are right there, before and after every broadcast. So if anything, we're putting money into public television. Over the years, our programs have raised millions of dollars for stations across the country. That is a fact. Big Bill's whole debate with Jon Stewart was like that. Even when he offered up a morsel of praise for anyone, he tripped over the facts. He gave a thumbs up to Jorge Ramos and Maria Elena Salinas, who were guests on Moyers & Company last week, for putting President Obama's feet to the fire on immigration reform.
A promise is a promise, and with all due respect, we didn't keep that promise.
But he had their network wrong, too.
And that was the best interview, by the way, these Telemundo people. That was the best one so far in the campaign.
Their own Univision bill, not Telemundo. Those two are competitors. Suppose I mixed up your Fox News channel with, say, the Cartoon Network. Anyway, no hard feelings. I've never even met Bill O'Reilly, by the way. But over the years, as his attacks on public broadcasting and our independent journalism have mounted, I've kept inviting him to come on our program to have a civil conversation about our differences. No editing, no tricks. I'll even introduce him to our fact checkers, some of the best in the world. We use them, too. So, Bill, come on over. But one word of warning. Big Bird's a friend of mine, and we public television types stick together like birds of a feather. Besides, he's bigger than both of us.
It's delightful.
You know, the thing I thought of when I was listening to that was, you know, the quote that he says, "Who's looking out for you, Bill?" Well, apparently, Bill, someone's looking out for you, and his name is Bill Moyers.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's just ridiculous. And I do have a,
But see, well, hold on a minute, because there's a point laying around there, David, that I don't want us to run past.
Yeah.
Bill Moyers could not get away with, on PBS, the abject falsehoods, utter lies, downright scurrilous behavior that Bill O'Reilly gets in, or gets away with, in the for-profit media. He couldn't do it.
Right.
Bill O'Reilly could not sit on a set of a program airing on PBS and scream, "Fuck it! We'll do it live!" Right. He couldn't do that. It sucks. He couldn't do it.
Nope, he couldn't.
But as long as it generates ratings, and as long as it delivers a not terribly bright, undoubtedly credulous viewing audience to people who are selling shares in beefsteak mines on Fox, then Bill's got a job.
You know, that's why I don't like team-ups like this when you have tickets to sell in pay-per-view and say, Jon Stewart versus Bill O'Reilly. Well, we saw it on TV.
Nah, see,
already.
When I was a kid, I looked forward to the first episode of Super Friends.
Yeah.
But it just didn't pan out.
Well, you know, Ted Knight did have a certain charm to his narration.
Back at the Hall of Justice Hall, yes.
There you go. And I hate to bring this up, but this is one thing that I wondered. Have you seen this Sean Penn short film about Americans?
No.
So I hate to bring this to you, Bob, because I don't want your stomach to start hurting. But guess who co-stars in this short film?
If you tell me Bill O'Reilly, I'm just going to turn it off and go home.
Oh, wait, no, but I'll give you a clue, Bob. The lab, one of the great things that he quoted was, and he was smoking funny things.
No, yes, damn Bob, you, no.
And it it's perplexing. So what it is it's a short film on the world of politics from two different contrasting points. So apparently Kid Rock is the really hardcore conservative.
What? Ted Nugent was busy?
what about
the woman from Everybody Loves Raymond the woman from the Alaska place with the moose and everything? What? Was she still scripting out her daughter's book? I mean, what? Really? Kid Rock?
And here's the interesting thing. The short film is executive produced by Kid Rock. So this means that he actually searched out Sean Penn to star in it, and after he told him about the concept. But you know, the thing is since when?
Yeah, but you know what Sean Penn probably did? Pure speculation here. He said, "I'll do it." No, I'll do it if whatever you were going to pay me, you give it to my Haiti charity.
Maybe.
I could see. That's the only way I could see it.
You know what? Kid Rock must have some goddamn charisma to get. You got Sean Penn to start. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. Just type in Sean Penn and Kid Rock in YouTube and look it up. And it's a surreal video because it's like 15 minutes. And you just watch it and you're like, this is insane. And so what it does is it takes you through this argument between two people that have met at a bar. One really conservative and then one really a liberal point. And I won't give you the spoiler, but after you watch it, you just sit there and you go, come the F on. I can't take Kid Rock seriously. It's like taking Ted Nugent seriously, only Kid Rock is like Diet Ted Nugent.
Oh, there's tonight's toaster. Kid Rock, Diet Ted Nugent. God.
Right. I mean, would you... Bob, when you watch,
we gotta be careful making Bob laugh, okay, David? Just bear that in mind.
I don't want your stomach to hurt, and for people who have a very sensitive stomach and very sensitive to illness, when you watch this film, you'll sit there and go, "What the hell is the point of this propaganda? What the hell is the point of this propaganda? It's to show that both sides do it? Is that what it is?"
It's to point out the false doctrine. It's not so much both sides do it. Both sides have equal and valid points to make.
Right.
And hence we go back to tonight's nominee number one, the independent voter. No, the undecided voter.
But here's the thing about it. Sean Penn is a well-read individual who has traveled the world and interested in an array of subjects, including Haiti, Tehran, and so forth, all around the world, climate change. Everything that you could think of, Sean Penn's probably into, the arts. Now, we contrast that with Kid Rock, who has said, and I quote, I don't really follow politics. I don't really follow politics, but I'm going to make this film about politics with Sean Penn.
I got nothing.
it's insane.
Well, and that's probably an I Got Nothing Institute funded project, don't you bet?
Right, and to tie it around to make this whole thing equal, I mean, to make this whole thing like wrap it up in a bow, this just shows you once again how the right wing and anyone associated on the right wing can get away with anything and just say, I don't follow politics, and you can make a political film.
You know, it's funny. I've had that conversation twice in the last 3 days, because one of them was with Agnes, and we were talking, and I said, "You realize, because listen, David, I don't want I, this is not one of those programs you tune into to hear the host talk about his monumental ego.
Right, right.
I hope I don't do that. If I get emails saying, Bob, you're doing it, I'll take a couple of days off and just, you know, reframe, reprioritize, focus. But the fact of the matter is, I would, this enterprise, this effort would not have lasted as long as it has if there wasn't some value to it. And right. And there's as much or more value in you and folks like Juanita and Sandra right. and all the folks who call in as there is in me. But the fact of the matter is, if I took this format and folded space and turned it 180 degrees and so forth, and did right wing conversation radio?
Yeah.
Do you have any beginning of an inkling of? I mean, there wouldn't be fun. I mean, there wouldn't be fundraising pitches out there. There wouldn't be any need for it. There wouldn't be any requests to help us pay this month's power bill. We'd have stock in the power company.
Right.
Because they fund that. The right wing understands. The right wing wants to advance the message. Our side, not so much. Well, I mean, you know, if you're gonna be a 110% carry water for the Democratic Party, no matter what they do, whenever they do it, yeah, then maybe they'll give you $1,000. But it comes with a form where you have to tell them where you spent every damn dime of it. And, you know, don't spend it all in one place either, Buster.
You know, Bob, since Kid Rock wants to get into politics, we can't call him Kid Rock. That's not a very political name. We have to call him by his government name, Bob Ritchie.
Absolutely.
Bob Ritchie's going to teach us a lot, people.
Senator, someday maybe it'll be Senator Bob Ritchie of Michigan.
Now, you just put that in the universe. I didn't.
It's on me, man. It's on me.
It's on you. And with that, on with another call.
Indeed, indeed. Thank you, David.
All right, later.
Bye now. Our pop culture correspondent, David, calling from Maine, and Randy writing in, if this is a live show, time to fundraise. Okay, that's twice tonight I said, hey, it's the 15th day of October. If this is a live show, time to fundraise, as the horn is behind badly. Yes, we are behind badly. I mentioned that at the beginning of the show, and we have closed the gap by about $30 so far. It would be nice if we closed it by at least 70 more. We entered the program, as I said, behind by $246. And, you know, the deeper the hole gets, the harder it is to get out of it. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the snail mail address if you prefer to contribute that way. This is the only way we survive. I added it up. There are $600 worth of bills waiting now that have to be dealt with. And with that, at 21 minutes before the hour, we will go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Well, hey, Juanita.
I feel for you with that gallbladder situation. I went through that for a long time.
Did you really?
Oh yeah, and
did it hurt like the very devil itself was inside your belly?
Well, I was just deathly sick all the time. I mean, just deathly sick. I just more than hurting. I hurt in one place, but I would feel like each finger had a mouth of its own of nausea. It just was horrible. But I know I had it since I was in school because I remember I thought it was something in my back. Because I hurt in the back.
I haven't had so much. I've had some of that. Some of that. Where you think it might be like kidney stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine goes from like right below my solar plexus over to my right and down my right side.
Mm-hmm. Well, mine was then like up above my waist. In the back, and it didn't seem like it hurt in the front, so I thought it was my back ever since I was in school. And so believe me, you'll feel better with it out. But
I'm
got
willing.
Another way, I don't blame you.
Well, no. The other way is a matter of necessity until we can figure out a way. Because among other things, it's a matter of I'm not going to do it and I can't do it. Because, you know, we struggle just to keep the lights on here with this program. I'm not going to stick my hand out and say, hey, and by the way, I know there's a lot of other uninsured people out there. Could you help me get my gallbladder out? I cannot do that. I will not do that.
Well,
right now it's just a matter of keeping this thing going.
Yeah, this is really a mess about the medical thing. You know, it really is.
Well, I mentioned that story on Thursday night, and that's when, and like I said, ironically, that's when all of this latest round started. And Juanita, the question that occurs to me is when Willard Romney says, "No, nobody goes without care in this country." How many millions of Americans go, we'll see, right, there's no health care crisis?
Yeah, sure they believe it till it happens to them.
Yeah.
And then they still believe it, just it's happening to them and not nobody.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they get wheeled into the emergency room. Bishop Willard Romney told me that everybody gets taken care of in the emergency room, and either government or charity or the hospital pays for it. Can you fix me?
But you know, it's when you go now, like the emergency room here, we probably got a really good one, and but it's not like they're not like the regular doctors there. There are a lot of them are new doctors. And,
oh, I never,
and some
I,
of them
I never,
are really good.
I never saw an MD there yesterday.
Well,
I saw a physician's assistant.
Well, yeah, there's more of them coming out.
And with this being a very rural area and Appalachia being Appalachia, there are a ton of people who use the emergency room as primary care.
Of course, yeah. They do here. And, you know, we used to have a county hospital, but our great wondrous leaders down here, the great commissioners, decided that it needed to be shut down. And it had gotten really good. It was horrible for years ago. It'd been around before, you know, since last Echo Age or whatever. But it had gotten the people, you go down there, and then there was only one time was rude to. And you go to the emergency room in the regular hospital, you're going to be getting some rude treatment sometime. It just ain't, I don't know. None of it's right now, Bob.
No.
I have the Advantage Care. And, you know, don't take away our Advantage Care. Well, every year they take away something from us that I've been on it. And the thing is that you have to have a general practitioner. We've only got, two or three in this town. And, I like the guy, but he's got an overload. And he told me he's only allowed so many minutes with each patient. So, this is what they want. I don't know. I just don't know, Bob.
I don't either. And I don't know. I know what the answer is, and I think you know the answer too, Juanita. I know you know the answer. The answer is Medicare for all.
Oh, definitely. I think that's what they should have done right off. Just gone in and say, let's pass the bill and let people who want to get into Medicare, let them buy into Medicare. You know, let it just run like regular Medicare, only be for all ages.
Yeah.
And it you know...
You know, if you want to continue to let somebody whose Christmas bonus depends on how many cases they turn down decide your care with United Healthcare or one of those other
outfits, that is so true.
Outfits,
it's true.
Well, you're free to do that. But if you want to join the single most efficient healthcare delivery system in the United States, then, you know, welcome to Medicare. And it is worth remembering, maybe this is anecdotal or apocryphal, But it is said that when Medicare was signed into law, the plan was, a couple of years later, to lower the eligibility age to, say, 60. And then a few years later, they'd lower it to 55. And a few more years, they'd lower it to 50. And eventually, it would have become universal single-payer health care. And the thing that ruined all of that was when Lyndon Johnson declined to run for re-election in 1968.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is that I remember, in fact, I was in the county hospital when it wasn't that good years ago when they started talking about having the Medicare. And all the doctors, every doctor you saw, they had their little signs for Goldwater. Every single one of them.
Oh, dear heavens.
But now you've got a lot of doctors who don't feel that way. But who do you see in Congress? You see the ones who do.
Oh, that's
all these Republican doctors, you know, other doctor.
Oh, like, I saw that horse's rear end from Wyoming today on TV. Silly me, I turned the damn thing on.
I can't think of who he is.
Oh, what his name? Boraxo or the 30 Mule Team?
I've got a lot of doctors in there.
Well, look, the Reverend Dr. Brother Representative Paul Brown, who says that all that stuff they taught him in medical school was lies from the pits of hell.
Is this the one that we were talking about there last week?
Yeah, standing there in front of all them dead deer heads. Talking about how the major decision making document he uses is the Bible.
Yeah, everything that you need to run a government. We don't need a constitution. We need that.
Yeah, we just need the Bible.
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of it's going to be.
You know what?
There's no
arthroscopy. There's no bypass surgery in the Bible. There's no heart transplants for Dick Cheney in the Bible.
Speaking of which, his ugly head.
Oh, yeah, didn't he?
On this Libya thing.
Well, he better watch out, or Joe Biden will get his Irish up and just go yank at Barred Heart out of his chest.
Well, you know, I
think it's only in there with bailing wire.
I really think that. I've been thinking this a long time. Our country, if they claim they're Christian, it's a Christian country, they claim. And I don't like, this is one thing I don't like about Obama, is those people were not brought up on charges. And I don't care whether they spend 1 minute in jail, I want them to have to swear to tell the truth and to do it publicly. I want them to have to do it. But they didn't. They went under, what you call it, they didn't have to swear on the Bible, and they didn't have to do this. It wasn't public. And I wish one of the countries would get a hold of them, including, what's the guy in the Pentagon that likes to stand up and work.
Oh, Donald Rumsfeld?
Yeah. I've got Romney and Rumsfeld and everything all mumbled up in my mind. But anyway, yeah. I got a new, let's see what you call it, Moran?
Yes?
Charlie Daniels.
Oh, no. What's Charlie? I mean, I know he's a fundy and stuff, but what's he done now? What is he, on the world?
Well, I'm getting...
Is he on the world tour with Bo Cephas or something?
I'm getting I'm getting stuff from him on my Facebook, simply probably because I do like his music. He's one of my favorite musicians. I've been to see him in person. But I do not like his politics. I do not like his brand of Christianity. And but he's got all these little words of wisdom, and then he puts a little essay in there, and all these people, oh, Charlie, once you run for president, I'd vote for you. You'd be our president. You know, it's all that kind of junk.
I like it better when you do voices than when I do voices, Juanita.
I know. Oh, gosh.
Because I can just see whoever wrote that. I've got a vision of them in my mind.
Oh, and then I know that I told you last week.
Charlie, he's so smart.
last week, I think I told you about writing all this stuff about to these people that I've known since they were kids. Anyway, on Facebook and about them coming out now, really coming out. You know, oh, that vice president, where he acted. And then I'm for right to life. I'm for right to life. Well,
once the baby's born, it's off on its own.
This one guy, he keeps writing, and he told me, that I had, we really thank you for your 7 comments. But we're for Romney. And, anyway, I told him that, the reason for the several ones, my computer has a mind of its own, and it does. And
oh, and
so
by the way,
I wanted
to mention to you, Juanita, I had an email, after our last conversation saying that, they wanted to be friends with you on Facebook. If you want to tell people how to find you on Facebook, I'm sure there's a bunch of people that just love to be your friend.
Well, there's
they're members of the Horn.
I connected to you, but I haven't heard anything.
I
don't have my last name on there. It's just Juanita N A for no answer.
Just all you are is Juanita N A.
Uh huh.
So J U A N I T A N A.
Uh huh. N A. Yeah. But anyway, then he finally, when I said that about the amount of times, and he said, well, just watch it. And then the last communique I had, was they had said something about wanting to take our country back, and I said, to where?
Yeah.
He made a derogatory remark about liberals.
I was on Twitter. I think it was my Twitter buddy K. Mark Hoover. That's his handle.
Uh-huh.
Said the Repiglicans want to take us back to 1952, and I said I think you got too many digits in there. I think it's more like 952.
Yeah. Well, if we go back to 1952, it's 6 days a week work.
It's 6 days a week
work.
Ain't
no 40 hours, huh?
Yeah, 6 days a week work.
And it's not no 40 hours.
What's the minimum wage? All the gay folks got to get back in the closet.
Well, forget them. They're mentally ill.
Right. Well, there won't be any interracial marriage. We can go back to separate drinking fountains and giving up seats on buses. And,
right. Right. All of that, yeah. But, I don't think we think about, where are we going to go back to? I want them new and improved. I don't want to go back to Jim Crow and all that stuff. I suffer for that.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't realize that when I was, still ignorant. But I remember a person, a white person saying that, they were in the movement with King, and they said, if they get help, we get help too. Things are better for them, but things would be better for us. But now the attitude is, well, at least you're white. You may not have nothing or whatever, but at least you're white, right?
Right. Don't be giving up on your privilege. And that really, that really pissed off a lot of reactionary right-wing conservative white folks during the civil rights movement. The fact that, and they'd say things like, "You're a traitor to your race."
As if
when you emerge from the womb white, you're immediately administered an oath.
And have you ever seen some of these people that say that they're white supremacists? And you ever see some of them?
Yeah, they take a pretty broad definition of supremacists.
Yes, they do. They sure do. And another thing I wanted to ask, this is something that I've been thinking about. I don't know if I've ever said anything about it since we got into the Iraqi war.
Mm-hmm.
Something I often wondered was if they truly believed that there was weapons of mass destruction, why on earth would we send our people into that place? Didn't they think that it would be used on them? If they really, really believed that, and a lot of people believe the propaganda, but whoever really believed it, why, I was thinking, what is, that doesn't make sense that you would send in our troops into that.
Right.
And according to what I've heard, it was pretty bad anyway, you know. They had to march through all these dust storms, and they got there, and it was, and this is the first person basis I've heard. They got there, they were out of bullets, out of ammunition.
Right, and
they were out of something to drink.
Unarmored Humvees. Oh, I remember so much of it. I remember when Halliburton got busted for running kitchens, mess halls.
Yeah.
That were just filthy.
And, you know, some of the best cooks I've ever met, they used to cook when they were in service. They learned to cook in service.
Right, but, you know, the private sector can do that cheaply and better. So
yeah.
That's one of those things that we needed to let the private sector be doing instead of the military worrying about feeding its soldiers. Oh.
They just... Yeah, it's just...
Everything is an opportunity to try to make a buck off of...
And that's it.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that saying, I mean, from the Bible, the love of money is the root of all evil. Money's not, you know, in the Old Testament in Ecclesiastes, it says money is the answer for everything.
Right. Well, the right way is...
The love of money ain't...
is the root of all evil.
The thing is that, you know, of people that have had a lot of money and they're so cheap. There was some woman in New York City that she was wouldn't even take her child, you know, had a broken leg, and she just wrap it up in newspapers. And I've heard a lot of that. I had a friend from New York, where she was raised up there, and she said this guy'd come in every day to where her mother worked in this little cafe, and they would give him free food. You know, he would just be, you know, just disheveled, and they found out the place where he lived, he didn't have heat, and, you know, everything. And when he died, the guy was a millionaire. I think that might be love of money.
I think you're right.
Oh, Bob, I'll tell you.
I know.
This is really a mess. But now I'm getting all these other things about our right to life and all that kind of stuff, you know. And
yeah, I know. The poor little fetuses.
They don't think. I'll tell you something funny. This guy said on that journal show, Washington Journal.
Mm-hmm.
He called and he said, "Well, we've got these two Christians running for president and vice president, and we got to get them elected." So, do you know? So if we don't honor Israel, we're going to be in trouble. So we've even got a vice president there now, and he's Jewish, and he's against the Jewish people. He's against the Jewish government. And I thought, well, ding dong, you know, the guy is a Catholic. I mean,
I was getting lost there for a minute.
He was calling Biden a Jew.
He was saying Biden's Jewish?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, there's so much.
Oh, the stupid, it hurts, Juanita.
What is that show, Idiocracy? I've never seen it, but that's a good word.
Well, yeah, that's right out of it. By the way, I just had an email come in from Beth in Texas. She said, "I found Juanita on Facebook, and I sent her a friend request." Please, please let her know I'm not Charlie Daniels' ex-wife or anything. Send a smiley face.
Well, tell anybody that wants to get on there to be sure that they came from the show. I get some other stuff.
Yeah, just send a note along and say, heard you talking on the horn. And
yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening.
Oh, you too. And Mom, I hope you get all right.
I do too. I'd like for this to stop.
Because I know that
it's like banging your head against a concrete wall.
It feels,
no, it is. It's like banging your head against a concrete wall, Juanita. It feels so good when you stop.
But, you know, I was blessed about being able to have my eye operated on. I do have a good program for that right now. And I think I've calmed down where I could get my other eye operated on. But my glasses I'm not too happy with because they're bifocals.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have a problem with them. I can't see the internet or TV.
Oh.
Well,
you're not missing much television. But.
Well, that's true. Oh, I got to tell you. If anybody gets a chance, they've got a new show on. It's in a series. I think it's 13 parts on a PBS.
Uh-huh.
It's called Call the Midwife.
Oh, really?
Has anybody seen it? I watched it by accident because I wanted to see upstairs, downstairs. And I turned it on, and it came on about 7 o'clock, you know, like 2 hours apart on my PBS program. It's a British, like a British maid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right after they had gotten the medical care, what you call it. What do they call those in England?
Oh,
it's based on that time period. Whatever it is, to me it seems like it's either pre-war or, you know,
immediate post-war.
Immediate post-war. But anyway, it really brings home to what women went through and still were going through that had hardly any care. And this was the Catholic nuns or something, but these girls would come in, and they weren't nuns or anything, but they were trained. And it was based on a true story. And it is wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, and Marty reminds me, what we're thinking of is the NHS, National Health Service.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And because they would ever say that, thank God we've got National Health Service now, you know. But one woman that showed
And it's called Call the Midwife?
Call the Midwife. And it's basically about different stories about the young midwives, you know.
Oh.
That they're studying.
Well,
it sounds
like it made an impression on you.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. I mean, it was something I thought, I don't think I want to watch that. And I turned it on anyway, and boy, I got into it.
Yeah.
And I watched it again last night, a new one. You know, I think it's 13. Series. And that show that Abbott's is coming back on in, I think, in early November. Was that show on?
What? The Downton Abbey?
Yeah.
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 Oh, we got some serious Downton Abbey people watching folks out there.
I've
never seen it.
You haven't?
No.
Well, I just got into that, too. Now, what I really love is English Mysteries. And
Now and then I'll quit.
English know how to they know how to put on a show.
I caught that Sherlock Holmes thing that they did, and I thought that was pretty cool. But I could never, I don't have a TiVo or anything, so I can never be there when it's on. And it seems like every time I turn on PBS here, West Virginia PBS, I'm not kidding, it's either Lawrence Welk or Red Green, or it's a gospel sing along, and I'm told that. Because they fundraise from donations and everything, that if they miss an episode of Lawrence Welk, or if they miss an episode of Red Green, or if they miss an episode of the Gospel Sing Along,
I don't know who Red Green is.
No, it's a really, really not funny Canadian comedy series. I guess
Really?
Yeah, I guess it's funny to Canadians. Now I'm gonna get letters from my.
Well, they've had some pretty funny people, but I'm.
Well, he was not one of them. but apparently, if those things don't run, the contributions dry up. So you know they.
I worked at a retirement home, boy, they wouldn't miss Lawrence Welk.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
But it seems like that's what's always on. Although I do try to sneak over and. Watch a Nova or something like that every now and then.
Can you get stuff on your internet to watch?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of those programs you can.
And some of them, I have.
Yeah. But I know it does take extra time.
Well, I just have to remember to do it. It seems like I just run around in circles most of the time, Juanita. But maybe that's my lot in life. You have a wonderful evening, and check your Facebook. And if you've got new friend requests, don't worry. A bunch of them are probably your friends and your neighbors and your pals and your buddies and your brothers and sisters from the Horn family.
Well, I was going to say the ones that are supposed to be my friends around here. I don't know.
Yeah, Facebook has a pretty broad definition of friend, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. Now the reason I put that NA on there is because I don't like to put that. Too much personal information.
I don't blame you.
You never know. And anyway, there's still a lot out there. My son's on there too. If you want to be a friend of his.
Oh, Charles.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll go wandering around, and I'm sure others will too. Juanita, have yourself a wonderful evening, dear.
You too.
All right.
Yeah.
Bye now.
I hope you get better soon.
Thank you.
Bye
bye. Bye. And that is our dear friend Juanita from Central Florida. Beth wrote in earlier about Medicaid eligibility in Texas in response to what Kevin had written earlier in the program. She said, here, if you're an adult, I would like to say that you don't have to be reduced to living in your car, except that they want to know why you still have a car. No dice. Medicaid is available for absolutely indigent elderly and children and for pregnant women needing prenatal care. The coverage for the mother ends 2 months after delivery, even if she's still suffering from postnatal complications. So, yeah. And just to share a couple of other notes before we run along to the phones, not run along like in leave, but go back to the phones. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
But you are, Blanche, you are.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Every time you mention his name, I think of that movie.
Well, it's hard not to.
Well, I think it's kind of appropriate, really.
Well, except for the fact that I think Blanche was a decent human being.
Yes, she was, really. What a film. I have two books to recommend. The first is called... Strom Thurmond's America.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah. And if you really want to understand the birth of the Southern strategy and the coalition that developed back then, read that book.
Because Strom was one of the first. He smelled the first whiffs of the civil rights movement and ran for president in 1948 against Harry Truman.
Yeah, he ran as a Dixiecrat.
Yeah.
And I knew Senator Thurmond. I met him, known him, and to me he was a very decent person. He was a great friend of my dad, and he helped my dad out a lot when my dad was mayor of Camden to get a lot of stuff from the city. He really did. So there were good parts of Strom Thurmond, and also some rather bad ones. As a matter of fact, when Strom got into a situation in which he had fathered Essie Mae, he was a school teacher and all of a sudden left school teaching and went into real estate in Virginia. And then, of course, when Essie Mae was born and taken to Pennsylvania, well, Strom came back and started school teaching again and then started getting involved in politics against Olin Johnson, rolling with Olin, the new dealer from South Carolina. It's a good read.
I can imagine it would be.
And so I thought I would bring that up to you and suggest that, you know, you might want to read it. It's a good read, and it details Thurman's history, his background, and, you know, he was a well, he holds the record in the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest filibuster, 24 hours and X number of minutes. And in the book, it details the fact that he may have even gone to the Senate Turkish bath, or whatever you want to call it, and dehydrated himself, and then was fitted with some type of apparatus in which he could void.
Huh?
Yeah. He was fitted with some type of apparatus in which he would not have to use the WC.
Be damned.
There are all kinds of little tricks and things out there. But, I mean, he holds the record for the longest filibuster in the history of the Senate. And that was against the, Civil Rights Bill. And there is another book about gay authors, and it's called, my mind is playing tricks on me, Eccentric Outlaws. I can't remember the guy's name, but Eccentric Outlaws. And he really gets into William F. Buckley and Gore Vidal.
Well, isn't today Oscar Wilde's birthday?
Tomorrow. As in, coming out day was 11 October last week. But nonetheless, I can remember, when Buckley and, Gore Vidal got into it. Speaking of gay writers and things like that, not William F. Buckley Jr., when they almost got into a fist fight on one of the talk shows, I can't remember the name of it now, but I know Howard K. Smith was the narrator, in which Buckley was calling Gore Vidal a queer and all kinds of stuff, and of course Vidal was responding to Buckley's military service record, and of course Buckley simply taught Spanish during World War II. He kept saying he was the infantry and this kind of the other. It's just amazing how glamorous these people can make their public service.
Well, that's kind of like Francis Pat Robertson. You know that Pat Robertson?
Oh, yeah.
His daddy was a senator from Virginia.
Yeah, and he was the one who guarded all the VD people.
No, he was the liquor supply officer.
Oh, I thought he also had an additional job as distributing condoms when people left the ship, or was that somebody else?
That might have been somebody else, because I think
I get them all mixed up.
Yeah, I think Pat Robertson was ground military. I don't think he was Navy. Maybe I'm wrong, but I simply recall reading a story about him being the liquor supply officer.
Well.
You know,
that's great.
Protecting the bourbon stash from the North Korean horde.
That is great. But I'll tell you, when you get into the history of the Buckley family, and here's a story here for you if you got a few minutes, okay?
Sure.
William Buckley's dad was like an oil baron. He was new money in my hometown, Camden, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he purchased my grandfather's home on my mother's side. It was called Camp Shatka. And, of course, William F. Buckley Jr. spent a lot of time there. And my grandmother could not stand that son of a bitch. He had a pet python that must have been like 18 feet long.
Dear Lord.
That escaped. And my grandmother's other house was a block away from Kashatka. And it was a big place with a big porch and all the wisteria and all that stuff you can imagine. Okay? And guess where my grandmother found his pet?
Oh, I just...
hanging in her wisteria on her front porch.
I don't care if the snake doesn't do a doggone thing that will ruin your day.
It did hers.
Did she go get the hoe or?
No, she simply picked up the phone and called his mother, Eloise. And she said, "Look, Eloise, Bill's pet is here," because she had put it out to the neighborhood that, you know, there was a reptile loose, and he said, "Please collect this immediately."
And I trust it stayed put until it could be retrieved?
They were over there PDQ to get it.
Golly, Ned.
That was it, because my grandmother was not a person who took fools, any type of fool, whether it crawled or walked foolishly. And that was the end of that. But, I mean, Bill Buckley, William F. Buckley on the firing line. Remember those parts?
Oh, yes.
And it's just incredible when we sort of look back over the personalities of decades past. You know, be it Strom Thurmond or be it people like Gore Vidal or William F. Buckley, senior or junior. It's just amazing what influences they had. But the book on Thurmond is a particularly poignant read, because Thurmond had a lot of power.
Oh, yes, he did.
And he was extremely adept at using it. And I would probably say that, well...
Well, what I would observe, Jim, is that just as... And I don't think it's quite a fair comparison, but just as the seat occupied by Robert C. Byrd was dramatically watered down by its occupancy by Joe Manchin, so too, I don't know if you could call it a watering down, but Lindsey Graham, did you catch him trying to make hay out of the great Benghazi foreign policy crisis?
You know, Bob, I didn't, because every Sunday morning I watch the one on CBS with Charles Osgood. That's a very good program.
Yes, it is. It
has a number of things on it.
I loved it many years ago when the host was Charles Kuralt.
Well, Charles Osgood and...
Yeah, Osgood's good, too.
And Morocco and oh, my Lord, the African-American lady who's on there, she's wonderful. They have a lot of good personalities who host that show. But, no, I didn't.
Well, I find there's a level of hypocrisy involved with being Lindsey Graham that I think we could probably spend the rest of the program on, Jim.
Yeah, we've talked about him.
But to hear that man... try to blame the Obama administration for the death of our ambassador in Libya, when in point of fact his own party's majority in the House of Representatives deliberately cut on the order of billions of dollars from embassy staffing budget requests by the Obama administration is simply sickening.
Yeah, it is, Bob, because, I mean, that was absolutely criminal to have an ambassador in Benghazi, of all places. Because Benghazi, as opposed to Tripoli, is, how can I say this? Anything goes. I mean, from block to block, you've got all types of elements and people like that who are very hostile to the American presence, and it's not a very good assignment for an FSO, much less than a charge or an ambassador. That's for damn sure. But I can guarantee you they will try to make something out of this, whether it's before the election or after the election.
Oh, they're doing it now.
Or if Obama should win, for example, they're going to try to use this as some type of means of discrediting him to the point of perhaps impeachment or who knows. But my question is, when this business was going on, who in the State Department was talking to whom as far as the White House was concerned?
It is simply, I think it's very close to being impossible to know. I mean, I imagine that stuff is deeply deeply classified at this point in time.
Right there, exactly. So,
But I do find it interesting that the New York Times, in yesterday's op-ed page, published an editorial that they titled "No Shame," and it directly speaks to the issue of, you know, who's got blood on their hands from those deaths. And they say early on, Republican lawmakers leading the charge on Capitol Hill seem more interested in attacking President Obama than in formulating an effective response. And then they go into the details, Jim, the editorial board of the Times, and note that as part of the Republican majority that has controlled the House the last 2 years, Mr. Daryl Issa, who was one of the people who has been lambasting the Obama administration over this, joined in cutting nearly $500 million from the State Department's two main security accounts. Right. One of them covers things like security staffing, including local guards, armored vehicles, and security technology. The other, embassy construction and upgrades. And in 2011 and 2012, President Obama sought a total of $5 billion and the House approved $4.5 billion. In 2009, Mr. Issa voted for an amendment that would have cut nearly 300 diplomatic security positions. And yet they're claiming that, and they're claiming that, that President Obama did something wrong? I mean, I think the New York Times is right, Jim. No shame.
You're right there, absolutely. Because in a situation like that, you have to be proactive and not reactive. Of course, who's to say? Was there some type of effort on his part?
But remember though, it was, I guess, 3 weeks ago now that I mentioned the article that had been featured in Salon by, I believe, Craig Unger, that talked about this high-level Republican meeting where they came up with what they, you know, their October surprise, that they were going to attack President Obama as being weak like Jimmy Carter on foreign policy. And we have pointed out it's that article's accuracy time and again, Jim. And yet it's in Salon. It's not on the front page of the New York Times. It's not in the Washington Post. It's not anywhere because the for-profit media are absolutely beholden to this pornographic, toxic flood of cash that happens biannually and quadrennially in the case of presidential elections.
You know, Bob, I really miss Katherine Graham and Ben Bradley. I really do.
Well, there's a lot of they come to mind. I miss the journalism that used to attend the newspaper business. I don't know, you know, a lot of people talk about Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite, and so forth, but the electronic televised or radio broadcast news has never been able to do what a newspaper can.
Not really, and particularly when you look at Fox News. I mean, when you see these gorgeous women they have on there, okay? It was mentioned earlier by someone else, I believe, on your program. I don't think that any of those women could have looked any better if Alfred Hitchcock had been their director, because you knew how meticulous.
Oh, he knew how to make a woman. He was hell to work for, but he knew how to make a woman look beautiful on screen.
I mean, whether it was Eva Marie Saint or Tippi Hedren, I mean, whoever did their hair and stuff like that, everything was totally flawless. And, you know, Fox has followed his playbook in that. And they don't have to say a whole lot, because people look at the visage of the person and they say, well, you know, ain't she pretty?
Right, and how else do you ignore the fact that they're calling on as a contributor a guy who was a serial adulterer with his wife, former governor of South Carolina, who then proceeds to call the president of the United States a spear chucker, Jim.
That's a real knee slapper. He really did that.
I played the audio of it. He said, talking about the next debate pageant, and of course the president will be throwing a lot of spears.
Oh, but he used the term spear chucker.
No, it's dog whistle code. You would never say that Bill Clinton threw spears. You would never say that George W. Bush threw spears. It couldn't have been any more obvious if they'd had jungle drums playing in the background like they did with that one ad several years ago.
Okay. Well, that's typical for that particular gentleman who was the former governor of South Carolina. I mean, that guy's just absolutely bonkers. But he's dangerous bonkers because he's still around, even though being disgraced, lied about what he was doing, when he was doing what, supposedly hiking somewhere, was it South America?
No, hiking the Appalachian Trail, naked.
The Appalachian Trail?
Yeah.
Well, I've heard South America, too. I mean, there have been some...
Well, that's what came out after the first lie failed, because they said, where's Governor Sanford? And his chief of staff said, he's hiking the Appalachian Trail. That's what he's doing, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, that's all I have to add are those two books. Like I say, they're good reads, and, you know, book TV that comes on, I think it's on either Saturday morning or Sunday morning, in which they have authors doing respective works. That's a good program to watch if ever you have a chance.
Oh, it is. I catch it every now and then. I just don't watch a whole heck of a lot of television.
By the way, have you been getting a lot of calls from the right wing?
We've been getting some robocalls.
Well, these aren't robocalls. These are live calls.
Right? I've gotten some robos. I haven't gotten any live ones. But then again,
over the past 2 months, I probably get at least two or three a day. And I don't know if this is someone who's doing this just to harass me or whatever, but I found the perfect way to answer these people when they come on the line.
Well, do tell.
Well, I just, you know, I throw the hook out, or they throw the hook out, and I pretend that I swallow it and listen to what they say. And what I told them is, and I have a device in my hands I'm going to use. You're not going to like it, but I want you to hear it because it sure gets them off the phone.
Is this going to hurt my little eardrums?
Not really.
Okay. Okay, yeah, those work.
And believe you me, if that doesn't get them off the phone, nothing will.
And you've kindly provided them with the impetus to go and file a workers' comp claim.
I think what the hell they want to. I mean, they can file all the way to the nether regions of hell for all I care, because some of the stuff they say is just absolutely incredibly just stupid.
Well, and, look at what we're dealing with. I mean, you got Joe Manchin in a TV ad with a rifle in his hands, and then threatening anybody who dares to speak out against coal or fracking. I mean, that's a little bit, wouldn't you say, you know, the technical term for that is the chilling of free speech. Wouldn't you say that having your sitting senator threatening you with a gun is a little bit chilling?
You mean click, click, if he slides the bolt back in his...
Yeah, they made a point in this ad to show him pulling the bolt back. And then at the end he'll say, and I'll stand up to anybody who wants to fight us, or whatever it was. You know, all I want is for my grandchildren to be able to live have a reasonable chance at a healthy life.
Well, that's understandable. Absolutely. And this band doesn't really care a great deal about that, Bob, I'm afraid.
No, he's got his, screw me.
Well, that's the attitude of most of the people.
who are in any type of position of authority or power, or who managed to secure wealth and hold it, and there's no element of compassion or sympathy. And of course, we're just going over trodden ground here, but we know exactly where they are and what they're trying to do.
They are who we thought they were.
And I'll tell you one thing. I hope tomorrow night that the president will assert himself and do so in a manner.
Yeah, but you hurt me early in the show with that Candy Crowley crack. Don't say Candy Crowley crack. No, bad term. You hurt me with that Candy Crowley remark.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, no, it's just laughing hurts right now, Jim.
Well...
But look, I look for nothing from her. She's a right wing shill. She's a for profit media maven with a vested interest in perpetuating the horse race theme.
Oh my God! During the Bush campaign, she was assigned to cover George W. And it was absolutely sickening to not detect but just hear the outright bias.
That's what I mean.
Of this woman. I mean, you talk about maven. Yeah, that's a good word for it. Exactly. A right wing maven. And I can imagine that Bishop Romney is going to have a friend in her tomorrow night. That's for damn sure.
Oh, right. I mean, I expect something along the lines of, President Obama, why do you hate Jesus? And the follow-up to Bishop Romney will be, and Governor Romney, tell us about how much you love children.
Oh, I can imagine that would be Bob. You know, poor Candy, honey, you can't how you look. You can't help how you look. But, darling, you could stay at home, or at least off the TV. Because she is one first-class bitch. I despise that woman. And the only one that I probably would give that label to would be, oh, who's the one that we both love who used to be on the court TV? What's her name?
Oh, Nancy Grace.
Nancy Grace. What in the world has happened to her?
I dare not ask for fear she'll resurface.
Yeah, I think she's kind of gone the way of the dodo. At least I hope she has.
God, I hope so, too.
That's one of the meanest people I've ever seen in my life. And, of course, there was another one who was on, you and I think David were talking about, who was on Bill Maher.
And Anthrax Coulter?
Oh, God. Oh, Lord have mercy. What a horror. What a horror. I mean, good Lord. I mean, she is the definite drag king of the whole network. No offense intended to anybody, but that's exactly what she would, it would like to come, you know. And it would be very sad to realize, and you're probably right about what you said earlier about the two of them during a break. Well, let's go get a drink.
Yeah. Nice job. Let's have a drink.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, maybe she'd like one of those liquid nitrogen cocktails.
Yeah, that'd be fine. As a matter of fact, I'd like to give it to her straight, you know? Why not? Well, listen, you've got callers waiting, so I'm going to get off here.
All right, you take care, Jim, and have a good evening.
But I do recommend those two books.
All right. Well, thank you very kindly.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Bye now. That's our good buddy Jim calling in. Jim gets mentioned in an email that just came in from James from Chicago. James with another book recommendation. He said, I listened to an interview with Dr. Alan Lockwood by Matt Rothschild of Progressive Magazine last week. I got to meet Matt up in Madison, Wisconsin last month. That was really cool. The interview centered around Lockwood's book, The Silent Epidemic, which is about the detrimental effects of mining coal and its effect on health. This book, yeah, this is a gotta read it. I don't know if you're aware of him or his book, neither of the above. Thank you, James. If not, maybe he could be an advocate of the AIC Act or a good read or maybe an interview for the Horn, possibly all of the above. He seemed to have a grasp of the issues at hand, both health and politically. I think that's an outreach we need to make. James says, I came to be aware of you a couple of years ago at the urging of Mike Malloy. One night I listened into the horn. You were going on for most of the show about mountaintop removal. I never heard anything like this before and didn't quite know what to think. I am, however, familiar with the ability of the gift of gab, that's a compliment, and the tremendous ability to relate a story in such a manner that draws one in such a way that it is truly captivating and provokes one not only to pay attention, but to think. After that first night of listening to the horn, I returned. I returned again and again. I was and am hooked. I love the internet format. I love the horn listeners and what they contribute to the discussion at hand. Big shout out to Juanita, Jim, Cassie, Albert the Sage of Southwest Wisconsin, Sandra, and the Horn family at large. I feel like you are my family. Thank you, Bob, for what you do and for your advocacy. Greatest of love and respect to you, your family, and the Horn family. James from Chicago. By the way, James closes, why does Rom have to be from Chicago? Jeebus. Anybody want to buy some infrastructure? Thank you, James. Kind words like that really make a tremendous difference in the ongoing efforts to continue this as we move toward our seventh birthday. Thank you. And I am going to check into the book and check in and see if maybe we can get... Don't know if we can get him on the program, but if we can make outreach and at least make him aware of the ACE Act, I think it might be something he'd be interested in. I really appreciate the reference. Jack from Shreveport writes in, says, in regard to the spear reference, oh, I got the spear reference too, the chucker thing. I just chimed in because being pretty sensitive to code words and phrases as well, I could hardly not make that connection. In fact, I find it hard to believe that there are people who wouldn't make that connection, including the freak you played the clip of. That's Mark Sanford, of course. How could it be possible that guy didn't know what he was implying? And that's the point, and I think Jack makes it. He knew... Look, these code talkers, these race code talkers, know damned good and well that they're speaking in code because that's what they need to do to reach their freak base. So that's why they talk that way. We've got an update on what's going on in Indiana coming from Greg. A long email. I'll try to. He says, I just started listening to your program. Mike Malloy speaks highly of you, and I see why. I'm sure most people in this country are fed up with the negative political ads that have been bombarding the airwaves for the last few months. Most, if not at all at times, originating from the right-wing filth machine, spewing their lies at will. One sad sack of potatoes here is a lying machine called Mike Pence, running for governor here in Indiana. Mike never hesitated to pursue the governor's house, since Mitch, I'm going to lease out Indiana's roads and state parks to offshore companies. Daniels found his way to our local college president role quite recently, namely Purdue. Yes, he's now president of Purdue University, compliments of the trustees who poured an enormous amount of money into our local and state's media to get him elected. On lies, of course. Anyway, what I've been pondering lately are the soldiers and military personnel returning home after they've served our country overseas. As you probably know, Mike Pence is a veteran of the military, as well as several members in Congress. Watching ads on TV at my friend's house, because I haven't owned a TV or cable subscription since September of 2006, as well as the Internet, I've witnessed several support groups stressing the fact that we need to take care of our veterans, both physically as well as mentally. As we both know, war is hell. In addition, we both know that the corporations are running the show as far as buying out our politicians. The Supreme Court's decision in August of 2010 didn't help matters any. However, what I'm seeing emerging in the last 5 to 10 years is the dangerous practice of the big military companies, our corporate media, and the congressional lobbyists building their own fascist robots, so to speak. Another way of looking at this is a corporate shadow government, slightly different than a military one. It is my belief and observation that the corporate shadow government is taking several military veterans returning from the war and reprogramming them to sell their products for them. I'll try to make some sense of this, says Greg. Unfortunately, many veterans returning home need various support groups to enable them back into society. I can only imagine the physical and mental anguish of holding a gun or killing someone overseas, especially if our soldiers don't believe in being there. However, and we both know that the filthy right want to defund any program that deals with the human spirit. If the Romney turd goes after Big Bird, then there's no doubt that he and Eddie Munster will bankrupt any kind of social service or therapy treatment. No doubt. But this is what's dangerous. I think, through the help of the lying corporate media in this country, they're setting the stage to have Wall Street do all their corporate therapy for some of our returning veterans. I'm no therapist by any stretch of the imagination. However, I can easily see how a veteran could return to the States with a high degree of vengeance and possibly hatred for this country. I can also see how that carrot on a stick could make a few of these veterans Satan's corporate disciples. After all, they would feel wanted, after all the corporate publicity being shoved their way. Why should a corporate lobbyist try to sway the vote of a civilian congressperson happily married with a beautiful family who's never served in the military when they could easily sway the vote of one who simply has an axe to grind after nearly getting their balls, legs shot off overseas? To me, anyway, it's all about influence and efficiency. With the ever-changing technology at hand today, communication is quick. I've sat in silence many times after reading, listening, watching the likes of a Mike Pence or a John McCain, and as God is my witness, Bob, nobody on the streets, even here in Cindiana, talks that way, the way that these two, and unfortunately many more congressional veterans, are starting to as well. If I'm even remotely correct, when we could see a backlash to this in the very near future, both in the policies that our politicians make and to the social and family damage created as well. I really think in my heart of hearts, the corporate powers that be are recruiting a few returning veterans that need social spiritual help. Instead, they're getting the corporate brainwashing that many are now being exposed to. I've noticed a trait that all of these returning corporate veterans have in common, Bob. They have a tendency to talk at the American people and not to them. And just like a bully, a corporate veteran is created and not born. Although the shadow government has been talked about extensively, such as John Kennedy before he too was killed by them, I think the shadow government has and is realigning themselves due to the changing technology in the last few years. They simply can train a few of them in the public eye. They can send them a message, usually lies, that can stir up controversy in the bat of an eye worldwide. From there, these pigs can run in the background doing the things they love best, killing our democracy while urinating on our Constitution. Remember, says Greg, you can lead the coerced to slaughter because you can't make them think. Wow. Greg closes saying, I like your repig-licking phrase. I myself have sent a few emails to Malloy in the past using the same wording. Good stuff. Thank you kindly, Greg. Thank you for your note. Jim responding to the note, he says, shadow government, been there a long time. Vets are expendable. Believe me. Also, Jim with a question, a relevant question about the AIC Act. How many signatures are required to achieve congressional recognition? Have been told 500 plus with 400 needed. Let me know. Here's the way it breaks out. I think the magic number is 218 for something called a discharge petition. That is roughly 50% plus one for that thing, the discharge petition, which would discharge it from committee and immediately send it to the floor for a vote. Barring that, and then, you know, then the rest of I'm only a bill on Capitol Hill kicks in, and if it passes the House, it goes over to the Senate for consideration. Barring that, it needs to, it would need a certain number of votes to get out of committee, and out of committee, it would then be subjected to a general floor vote. But 218 gets it straight to the floor. By the way, Andy writing in regard to the Benghazi controversy, the created controversy. Andy says, according to the New York Times, the security in Libya was outsourced to a British firm, Blue Mountain Group. Blue Mountain Group got the contract to protect the Benghazi embassy, and then they outsourced it to a firm in Libya. The Libyan contractors were ill-equipped and ill-trained. The Republicans are traitors, categorically are traitors. Because of their ideology to outsource, we no longer have our Marines on the ground guarding the embassies because it's too expensive. The blame should be placed on the Republican House members for this, not on Mr. Obama. When will the people wake up? The Republican Party is a bunch of insane, greedy pirates. And you know, when Andy writes me a note offering that level of defense of President Obama, you should take that to heart, because Andy does not go lightly on Obama. That means something. And Andy adds, it's cheaper, see? We can save money and shrink that big government by outsourcing embassy security. It fits perfectly with the Republican small government meme. Jesus, I didn't know that. That's brutal. That's sickening. We have brought in this evening, over the weekend, as I noted, we had some kind contributions, and I got thank you notes out. All the contributions are kind. It does not matter whether it is 5 or 5 million. They haven't gotten the 5 million one yet. But I do try to. I try to send out a thank you on everything that comes in the door. But this evening we have received one $30 contribution. That means that we are $70 in the hole for the evening. But we were in the hole before that. So the hole is about, let's see, there's that math on the fly thing again. I checked the bar at headonradionetwork.com just like everybody else does. That's why Andy sent me the time to fundraise Bob note earlier. And it was at like 9:46, which meant 250 plus... No, 250. Anyway, we're in a hole. We're in at least a $200 hole. By tomorrow, it'll be a $300 hole. Texas Betsy, don't worry, dear. She says, I get paid the 27th of each month, but I have a Hebrew school check to deposit this week, so maybe I'll send something early. Don't worry. Texas Betsy is another of it. See, even the all volunteer staff, everybody involved in this supports this. Agnes and I have poured money into it for years, and everybody. So any help is tremendously appreciated. It is about 11 minutes before the hour. A little time if you want to get one. Well, if you want to get in, a little time, but not much left. But a couple of folks, including Sandra and Marty, sent this one story in. And this is stunning. Why do I say stunning? It's not stunning. It's not stunning when snakes bite or scorpions sting no. It's normal. It's not stunning when Wile E. Coyote flies his rocket cycle into the canyon wall. It's normal. We're talking here, of course, about the Central Mississippi Tea Party. Now, all I have to do is say Central Mississippi Tea Party, and you probably know how it's going to work out, right? This is like Mad Libs, only with idiots. The president of the Central Mississippi Tea Party is named Janice Lane. Didn't she say, one day at a time, sweet Jesus? No, that was Christy Lane. Janice Lane gave an interview to the Jackson Free Press of Jackson, Mississippi. Now, why the Jackson Free Press wanted to... Oh! Sorry, just saw the photograph. Why the Jackson Free... She looks like Victoria Jackson 40 years from now. Why the Jackson Free Press would want to talk to Janice Lane is beyond me. But they did. And in the course of this conversation, this interview, she told the Jackson Free Press, Janice Lane, of the Central Mississippi Tea Party, she said, I'm really going to set you back here. Probably the biggest turn we ever made was when the women got the right to vote. Our country might have been better off if it was still just men voting. There is nothing worse than a bunch of mean, hateful women. They are diabolical in how they can skewer a person. I do not see that in men. The whole time I worked, I'd much rather have a male boss than a female boss. Double-minded. You can never trust them. If she's listening right now, somewhere in Montana, Kate has her dress up over her head, running screaming around the room. Yeah, that's... Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, the Seneca meetings. Right, because women are just mean. God, I hate this kind of stuff. There's never been a good female boss. Now, they're double-minded. You can never trust them. What is... Is this just... drop you in your tracks? I mean, I'm a guy and I want women voting. I don't mean that to sound surprised or anything. But Jesus. All I can say is, great, Janice Lane. We know how you're gonna vote, sister. Stay home. You don't like having the vote? Give it up yourself. But don't let the rest of the women of America, don't think you dare speak for them. But understand, this is not anything new. Ann Coulter came into the conversation somehow unbidden earlier in the evening. That woman has perhaps, even on Bill Maher's program, but somewhere, said that it was a great mistake to give the women folk the vote. And I simply do not comprehend the mind, be it male or female, that thinks it's okay to have a country where half the population doesn't exist politically. How can you call yourself enlightened, modern, free, or even civilization in a situation such as that? I can remember being a child and thinking, I'm probably going to live to see the year 2000. What marvel shall we see? And the marvel that we're seeing is a horrible, horrible marvel in which we see people joyfully marching backwards. Dern. It's like, it's not like running up a down escalator. It's like running down a down escalator. People died. Oh, stop it, Bob. Silly little optimist, history-appreciating person that you are. But Janice Lyon of Mississippi says it's probably the worst thing. And you know why it's that, you know why that gets said in Mississippi by a lovely little old white lady? Because, see, that's when the fluid gates opened. Because once the women started thinking that they could be voting, then the next thing you know, those people thought they needed to, too. Men's and women's alike. And look where our country has come to now. Jim pointing out, in 1912, women protested in the UK by stating, no vote, no census. Well, now in 2012, you just get Tea Partiers threatening to kill the census taker. Well, that was 2 years ago. I mean, what's a little death threat among friends, right? Oh, stop it, Benedict. Remember, Bob, these are the people you think it's important to keep in the Union. Well, yeah, I do. Too much blood was spilt. And this is not everybody in Mississippi. This is just the right-wing weirdos there. See, that's the thing. If you look at the... There are more normal people in Mississippi than there are Janice Lanes. But it's the Janice Lanes who hold power. I mean, if you tried to take Janice Lanes' vote from her, she would not willingly give it up. And she probably worries about the day when those people will take the white people's vote away, when there's more of them than there are of us. Yeah. Let's get one more call in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. I was just calling about... This is Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Calling about, hey, Bobby. About Benghazi. I just remind folks that are listening that the Marines that guard embassies, having been one, and to get accepted to the duty, you have to be... You have to request it. Then you have to be interviewed by your commanding officer. Then you have also have to... the requirements on paper match the requirements for the warrant officer program in the Marine Corps or an enlisted commissioning program. So these are actually really super squared away Marines, and I have a number of buddies that I served with that actually went on to get commissions in the Marine Corps now since retired as officers. So they're quality people, and I would just also make an observation with the people that they in the Iraq War that they strung over a bridge. Those were civilian mercenaries, Triple Canopy or Blackwater.
Right.
I'm not so unsure one wasn't an American female, but the really sad commentary is, you know what they were in the process of doing when they were captured?
No.
They were going to get toasters for their, for the brass at some camp there.
Oh, Jesus.
Literally saw.
Well, you know, what Andy just wrote in, and we only got a couple of minutes here, but what Andy wrote in, we don't even have that. What Andy wrote in about that this stuff was outsourced in Benghazi? I think Andy's right, Mark. That is something that approaches treason.
And that all starts a lot. Of course, it starts way back, but it really gets enforced under Bush 43. So they only have themselves. And this really reflects our whole government. If you break the economy, then you can send in Walmart. And that's really what Katrina was, and that's what the Blackwater connection is.
God, that's a profound statement, Mark. And you got a note in from Jim saying, thank you, Mark. And with that, I got to roll out, but good to hear from you, my friend.
All right, brother. Semper Fi.
All right. Bye now. Thanks, everybody. Time to go. Back tomorrow night, I hope. If I don't go on the road, that's still up in the air. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, especially you, who, with your kind contributions, keep this all on the air. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org. And always, always.